I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, welcome to this edition of Connections, and once again, my guest is Gloucester Times journalist Taylor Ann Bradford. And Taylor Ann, welcome back. I missed Connections last week. It's my fault, but I'm glad all is well.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I'm glad that we're getting together to get remote to talk a little bit. I know a lot has happened in the city since last time we chatted, so it's great to touch base.
Yeah, and I know this. We didn't talk about this in our pregame, but there's a remote meeting coming up concerning the drawbridge, the train bridge in Gloucester. That's available. I'll post the information on that. That's been happening, and lots going on. But boy, the headline this week that really knocked my socks off was I think it was on Monday's edition of the Times when the headline said something or other that there's a complaint about the mayor, and the mayor was called a toxic leader. So tell us about that, please.
Yeah, so as people know, the Harbormaster TJ currently has a lawsuit against the mayor and a couple other city administrators mentioning that there are workplace harassment complaints, that he's experienced extreme bullying tactics and threat towards employees from physical violence and threatening voice messages. And now the original lawsuit ties back to a really unfortunate situation that happened a few years back. If people know the situation with the two surviving crew members of the fishing vessel Orange Sea and the state of vessel owner Captain David Heavy D. Sutherland, who died during a rescue attempt a couple of years ago. And there's a lawsuit currently in process with all of that. TJ had gone on an outside job to be an expert witness in that lawsuit. And he's stating in his suit that he filed against the mayor, saying that he feels as if that the city is pushing him and creating an unfortunate work environment due to his involvement in that. Now that's the lawsuit, and there's a complaint. And the complaint, the HR complaint, really dives deeper into his concerns in regards to the mayor's treatment of him and other city employees. And so there's a lot there, and it's an ongoing conversation, I am sure. But I think that the big thing that he noted in his complaint is that just over the past several years, from his point of view, that the mayor has made countless abusive, harassing, and inappropriate comments regarding race, religion, and sexual orientation about city officials and employees and members of the public. So while his specific experience is rather tied to his involvement as an expert witness in this lawsuit, there seems, as implies in his complaint, that this is a bigger issue that doesn't just stem from his own experience.
What does this mean in terms of mitigation in terms of process? You mentioned two things. One is a civil lawsuit. The other one has to do with an HR complaint in-house, if you will. So when an employee or a member of the mayor's administration makes that kind of a complaint against the administration, what happens next, Taylor? I mean, where might this go?
Right. So when an HR complaint is filed, obviously the HR director is involved, and legal counsel and the mayor are involved. And now, in the complaint that TJ filed, he's requesting that the people, the mayor, and the legal counsel Chip Payson not be involved, right? Because he feels as if they're the ones who are at the offense. And so, as per as usual, they would be involved. And for this particular situation, since there's a lawsuit against those named individuals, the city has hired a legal counsel outside, but a part of their insurance to kind of handle the situation. But, some people aren't satisfied with that answer to the situation. Now, there's a few city councilors, those who are on the Budget and Finance Standing Committee, who are requesting that the city actually hire an outside expert to handle employee complaints about hostile work environments at City Hall because those administrators who are supposed to handle those issues, i.e. the mayor, Chip Payson, the HR director, are subjects of those complaints. Mm-hmm. And so they're requesting that in addition to hiring this person as an outside, that they should also be independent of any municipal insurance coverage, because those agencies, from these counselors' perspective, are focused on protecting the city's finances and not thoroughly investigating the complaints of harassment.
Right.
So there's a lot of, what is protocol, but this is a very particular situation where I think that the usual processes are getting a little bit muddled because those who are usually part of them are the ones who are being have allegations against them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's well thought out. Thank you for that. What I'm curious about is, you know, when you read about a crime or something or other, and then it says so-and-so can face a maximum penalty of this and, so many years in prison, so much fine. Do you know what the possible outcomes can be if this complaint goes through and whoever deems it, whoever makes the decision is empowered to make the decision? Do you know what the ultimate penalty could be? From my perspective, a layperson just looking at it, well, obviously it's a case of he said, she said. So where do we, what do we do as the public? Where do we look for? I imagine you're going to have to be covering this story for a while.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest question of them all is, right, what is constructive and where does the conversation go? And I think, from those who are filing the complaints, it's the hope of a change of heart, maybe a redirection in management and administration.
Mm-hmm.
I guess voting season is coming up too, so I guess the question is really up to the voters and what their thoughts are about what's been going on, as these things are coming out and what the mayor's response is to them. Now, we haven't received a response from the mayor in regards to our coverage of the situation. She mentioned that she's not going to be commenting on anything regarding pending litigation and then didn't return any of my phone calls or messages about follow-up. But it seems like that's the question, right? What's constructive? What is constructive going forward and how does the city go about, when I say city, I mean both the administration and those within city officials, but also, the community. How does the city go forward when allegations like this are being pinned up against somebody who is running the city? So it's a great question, and I don't have all the answers.
Right, right. No, I get that, yeah.
I see, yeah, that it's that question of, I don't think that as of right now, it's not so much you mentioned, people going to jail and stuff like that. I don't think that.
Oh, no, that was just because, no, I wasn't even implying that. What I meant was you read about it. When there's an offense, you read about the possible punishments for the offense. That's all I was saying. Good Lord.
Oh.
I hope
yeah,
this.
No.
Good enough. No.
That's not the current situation But I do what you mean. And
yeah.
That's the biggest question is what's going forward. And I think that's what we'll uncover as we continue to cover and report on the situation is, what the city response.
Yeah, I think we'd like to see some resolve to this because it's the cloudiness in the air has been up for the electricity in the air has been there for quite a while in town. And, obviously I think people would like to see an amicable resolution as soon as possible, for sure. Well, let's switch gears now. As I walk downtown, there are no parking signs all over the place, and it was a mystery to me as to what these signs meant because it was they were up for quite a while, and they were Monday to Tuesday, Wednesday, all day long, and so on. Even on, I think it was on Pleasant Street, I'm not sure, but pretty much on Main Street, and the mystery has been solved. You've solved that mystery for me as to what these signs are about.
Yeah, so those no parking signs are a part of an initiative that the Community Development Department and the DPW are working on making downtown more accessible. And I realize this is quite a change of gears from what our last conversation is, but The city is seeking to make downtown more accessible, and what that means specifically is that street, sidewalk, and curbing improvements to various downtown areas that include City Hall, Sawyer Free Library, and Cape Ann Museum. And so what that improvements in accessibility looks like is installation of wheelchair ramps, crosswalks, pedestrian walkways, including signage and signals, that are compliant with the American with Disabilities Act. Then the installation will provide the safe ADA compliant pedestrian connections among and between the various downtown streets. So that includes Roger to Main Street, resurfacing Parsons Street, and an update to the crosswalks on Roger Street with like two rectangular rapid flashing beacons that you might see in other locations around the city. And so what you're seeing with the no parking signs is the ramps. They're going to be installing ramps this Wednesday around the city, and they're going to begin on Main and Pleasant Street and move towards the West End as the weeks go on. And this project's about to go for the ramp portion of the project. It's estimated to be a two-week project, and it's a $600,000 project. They just got a loan from the city to do the work, and it's a part of a bigger shared streets grant, which the city received in $275,000. That is focused on supporting, connectivity, mobility, and just all around more access to
Excellent.
Safe access mm-hmm. to people who come to visit and those who live here.
Very nice, very nice. Now, this is a question I know you don't have the answer to because you weren't here for this, but bricks were installed on the sidewalks on Main Street, a few years ago, probably when you were in elementary school, and these bricks are so slippery. when it rains, never mind the ice, and it's just curious to me that now they're coming around to try to make this thing safer, and I don't know anybody who loves those bricks, because the concrete portion of the sidewalks that's very easy to walk on when it's raining, but it's just kind of ironic that years ago when they did the complete reconstruction of Main Street, in my opinion, it made it more difficult to walk on. But that's another story. That's just an editorial comment on my part.
Well, I can tell you, though, that, you know, from time of living in Italy, that those bricks with the music coming from Virgilio's is very replicable of, some of the cobblestone corsos in Italy. So, mm-hmm. It does bring people back to maybe places abroad. But, yeah, in terms of navigability, it is a bit tricky.
Okay, well, I'll probably catch heck for that. But anyway, that's my observation. Okay, finally, Taylor Wren, as the weather gets nicer, more people get vaccinated, more people are getting out, and I believe you have some information regarding situation last year up in Lanesville with the quarries, parking and people swimming and all that stuff. So what's the latest on that?
Yeah, so last year, everyone knows Gloucester got flooded. I think at one point the mayor said on television, do not come to Gloucester. Like, we're like almost like closing down Gloucester's beach, or they closed down Gloucester's beaches to non-residents, and just because of so many people wanting to get outside, wanting to explore, being cooped up due to the pandemic. That didn't only include the beaches, but also the nooks and crannies, including the quarries. And the quarries got pretty inundated with people, and that included littering and graffiti and trespassing on private property. And so what happened last year was that they had to close down all the quarries, all that trail access to those quarries, and it put in an up to $300 fine for littering. People were parking in residential neighborhoods. It was crazy. And so the city, particularly Val Gilman, who's the city councilor, is really trying to get ahead of the game this year and trying to make ways in which to, really figure out a good best practices for quarry management so that people can enjoy the quarries, but also they can protect these just landscapes and historical areas that they love so much, and that the residents, live here, and part of the plus of living here is having so much access to that. But when there's so many people, it really disrupts their daily life. And so they had a Zoom meeting last Thursday to talk about, what does it look like to go ahead into the summer with the quarries. And they had historian Les Bartlett on, police chief Ed Conley came on, the mayor came on, and they all talked about, how we all value the quarries and the natural landscapes for different reasons, but what does it look like to care for this land and to make plans going forward? And Les said it greatly when he said, it is looking for us to develop an active awareness from our underdeveloped power of civic pride. And so really trying to emphasize, people are passionate, but how do you take that passion and put it into action to make a better tomorrow? And so nothing has been determined about how they might manage the quarries this year, but they did get a lot of insight about, what people's perspectives on how they wanted them to be managed. And, you know, why do people go to the quarries? And so there's going to be, on April 26th, the Open Space and Recreation Committee is going to be hosting a public forum to introduce the public to the discussion around open space and recreation and offer regional demographic data and also create an additional survey so that the community can kind of give an additional thought and perspective on how we enjoy our local trails and our local watering holes in a safe and respective way to both the community and the nature itself.
Well, that gives a great segue into your column. Will your column be coming back this week?
It will be, and I'm quite excited. This one is might not be where you expect it to be.
Okay.
So I think I'll leave it at that.
Okay. And then it'll be on Friday, though, right?
Yeah, it'll be on Friday.
All right.
We're a little bit away.
Okay, so we tease.
Luckily, the weather looks great to go exploring.
All right, so we tease the Friday column with Taylor Ann Bradford. And anything else, Taylor Ann? I mean, I don't need Google. I can just call you. This is pretty cool.
I think the biggest thing is just stay tuned into what the city's been going on. I know there's a lot of Zoom meetings on the city's website about different subcommittees, standing committees, and, you know, different groups that are hosting ways in which to make Cape Ann a vibrant place as it already is. And as we kind of look at the summer months, and I know people are eager to get outside, you know, how do we do that in a safe and respectful way while we're still in a pandemic? And so stay tuned as things keep coming up, and we've got a busy week of reporting ahead of us.
That is Gloucester Times journalist Taylor Ann Bradford. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.